Okay, so we talked last week about some of the considerations involved in accepting a ger and welcoming a ger and how enthusiastic we are and when are we less enthusiastic. And we talked a little bit about that whole process of investigation, of trying to determine whether the individual in front of you is properly motivated and is properly committed to everything that's involved. And as we mentioned, those are two separate considerations, but they play into each other, because a lack of motivation or a outside motivation can affect the commitment as well. And that led to a certain hesitancy and a certain care being taken in inspecting the situation in front of you. And we talked a little bit about whether there are exceptions or there are times that maybe we would encourage a ger and say we will kind of proselytize, we will seek out the opportunity, and if not that, at least we will be welcoming without any kind of a resistance, without playing hard to get it all. So we talked about how some scenarios that might indeed be the case. So, for example, somebody who grew up practicing Judaism and only discovered at some later date that there's actually an issue and they may not technically be Jewish, so that could lead to a very different attitude. Or related to that, just to flesh that a little bit more, if somebody is a Suffolk, let's say, if somebody, we don't know that they're Jewish, but they might indeed be Jewish, so we don't want to leave the situation as a Suffolk. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein had an article where he established that that might be a scenario where we might encourage conversion and be more lenient about the process of bringing that individual in. He made reference to a statement to the Sfas Emes. And there are a few other such situations. So the most complex one, perhaps, is the question of intermarriage. So if there is an existing intermarriage, so would we encourage conversion there more than normal? Or would it perhaps be a reason to go in the opposite direction? We know from Nach, from Sefer Ezra, that there is a hard line taken against the intermarried Jewish men who are told to leave their non-Jewish wives. And there's a whole literature about that, whether that's relevant to understanding today's scenarios. Is there a reason why he didn't seek the conversion instead? It's a discussion among those especially who advocated for a more lenient approach in the case of intermarriage. How do you address the whole story of Ezra? Why is that apparently a different kind of attitude that we find there? Maybe it's because Israel Hildesheimer and others discussed those psukim. Maybe it's because they weren't going to be willing to accept Judaism, or maybe it was a special assessment of the needs of the moment, and that was a decision that Ezra made, and maybe one could come to a different decision now. Maybe it all depends on the overall circumstances. So there's a lot of debate about that. So within that, the question of marriage is particularly complicated because of a specific Isser Drabanan that also plays a role. And that, as you got a chance to see, hopefully in today's list, that there is a Mishnah in the second parak of Yomos, before the Geirah Sugyas, on Chav Dalet Amud Beis, where the Mishnah talks about people who are suspected, ha-nitan. And there are a couple of different types of nitan. It's not specifically a Geirah's Din. It comes up in other contexts as well. So if somebody is suspected of a relationship with a shivcha, then she later becomes freed. Or if someone is suspected of a relationship with an Eishes Ish, and she later becomes available. So in this context, we find a prohibition midrabanan that one should still not marry the person in question even after they become permissible. And in that context, the Mishnah talks also about an Ovedes Kochavim. Someone is suspected of a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, and then she becomes Jewish indeed. So there we find, together with these other categories, a prohibition of Nitan, a prohibition of somebody who is suspected of such behavior is not allowed to then go on to marry that person. And how does that affect Geiris? So we saw, because we were coming at it from the other angle before, that the Gemara says, well, it sounds like it doesn't affect the Geirus itself. It sounds like even though we're talking about converting someone who was suspected of being involved in a relationship with a Jewish person, and therefore it sounds like their motive to convert is for the sake of the marriage, sounds like they are still considered to be a kosher ger. Sounds like the conversion still works. And we saw that that was a machlokas in the Gemara, or seemingly a machlokas in the Gemara, but the conclusion was kulan gerim. That's what it seems like the conclusion is. And we also highlighted that there are two concerns, one's more serious than the other in terms of that question, that a bad motivation is more of a l'chachila concern, but after the fact is perhaps acceptable. And the bigger issue is that a bad motivation or an ulterior motivation would lead to a lack of commitment and not taking on the mitzvos, and that might be a more problematic issue, one that we can't so easily resolve after the fact. And the Ritva and many of the other Rishonim, as we saw, understood that the reason it's acceptable after the fact is because the assumption is that whether or not they came for the right reasons, once they're there, then they're going to commit to going ahead with all the demands of halacha and Torah and mitzvos. And then we discussed that there's a whole debate about whether that's still true or whether it's more true or less true nowadays, because we pointed to three social changes, each one may be relevant in different directions, that nowadays you don't necessarily have to be observant to be married to a Jewish person, but nowadays you don't necessarily have to convert also in order to be with a Jewish person, and you don't necessarily have to be married to be with someone culturally. So those are three different cultural changes, and each one may impact the story in different ways, and that was something we discussed then. So some of those points are going to be relevant to this question. So what about the concern, midrabanan, of niton? So if somebody is looking to marry a Jewish person, in addition to all the considerations that we see about mixed motives and questionable acceptance, what about this issa d'rabbanan that they're not allowed to get married because of the prior suspicion? How is that going to affect things? That's likely going to be an issue when dealing with any such situation. So how do we address the issa of nitan? So first of all, what's the issa about? Now, why do you have such a prohibition? Yeah, Elliot?
Probably to discourage the relationship in the first place.
Okay, that's a pretty reasonable theory. It's interesting, it makes sense, right? You'll say, which is, for example, the policy that the Syrian community has adopted, right? That because they are creating, and again, this is a controversial policy, which I'm not voting one way or another right now, but just report it. So they've taken this hard line against accepting conversion into the community at all, with all of the complications and questions that raises, because you feel that that way you're not going to be pursuing such a relationship thinking that it'll be eventually kosherable, because that option is closed off. So one could suggest such a reason. It's not what we find the Rishonim saying here, but such a logic does seem to express itself, at least in some settings. Moshe?
Yeah, just based on the Gemara and Rashi, it sounded like it was broader than just this kind of relationship. It sounds like a Jewish person is supposed to stay away from like bad rumors.
Okay.
So we don't encourage anything that will cause people to talk. And
okay, so that's what Rashi emphasizes. And the Gemara does support that interpretation also. Right? That Rashi's emphasis is, for all of these prohibitions, that by marrying the person who the rumors regard, you are going to give weight to the rumors. You're going to make everyone say, ah, oh, we were right. This is what we suspected all along. And now we see, oh, what a shock. They're married. Whoever would have guessed, we see that our suspicion was true all along. And apparently, that's something that bothers us by itself. So that's Rashi's take. And it's interesting. We have to figure out exactly what the scope of that is. Other Rishonim seem to understand it differently. Other Rishonim seem to understand it that the concern will be not that we're worried that it will support the rumor of their affair, but that it will create a rumor of lack of commitment to the proper motivation. That, okay, they'll say, oh, she converted for marriage. And that's something that the Achronim, a lot of other Rishonim say like this. Achronim struggle with that, because if we say that it's kosher b'di'evit anyway, if the motivation is compromised, so why are we so worried about people saying that? Or let them say that, and okay, still it's going to be a kosher gerus. So Reb Moshe Feinstein, for example, we'll talk about his tshuva in a moment. He tried to figure out why those Rishonim were bothered by this. Chaim Ozer, we'll talk about his tshuva also. They struggled with that position in the Rishonim because, and they have very different approaches to it. But if that's really the concern, why are we so worried about them saying something that wouldn't undo the Geirus anyway? So working within the position of Rashi, that the issue is we're going to support the rumors, you're going to give weight to what people have been saying. So it's an interesting position, because so then what would you say if it's not just a rumor, but we know it's true? Let's say they were Aiden. Does that make a difference? Is this only about suspected relationships, or is it true about definite relationships?
You think Kalachomer, if they fit the suffix, then for sure, if they were having a relationship.
Maybe. You would think Kalachomer from one perspective, but the question is, what exactly are we worried about? That if we're worried about supporting it, and it's already supported, so then maybe it should be different. Now, one big issue here is the Tosefta. I think I neglected to put the Tosefta on the Makoros list, so please add it now.
Get some Mukayosef, no?
Mukayosef quotes the Tosefta, yes. So that's an issue here, that the Tosefta, it's in Perek Dalet Hey of Yevamos. The Tosefta doesn't have it as a rumor. The Tosefta just phrases it as it happened. That basically Yisrael Habal Ovedes Kochavim shouldn't marry her. And still, the second part of the din is true. We have from the Mishnah also that if they do get married, so then we don't make them get divorced. It's a din l'chachila. They're not supposed to get married, but if they do, we don't make them get divorced. So that Tosefta, it's interesting. It's a problem a little bit for Rashi, because it would seem like it's already established, so then why are we worried about confirming the rumor? And the Nemuki Yosef, as Tyler mentions, it's a problem for his view also, because the Nemuki Yosef's point is to address the second half of it. He says, how come we don't make them get divorced if they're already married? So he says, because it's just people's rumors, so rumors are an issue, but we're not going to make somebody divorce his wife over rumors. But then the issue is, from the Tosefta, it's not just about rumors, it's about even if it's a fact, and as the Nemuki Yosef himself references that Tosefta. So Reb Moshe Feinstein, in a tshuva about this, this is one of the important approaches here, and you'll see Moshe as far as the Kal V'chomer. So, you know, it's interesting, you say a Kal V'chomer, so we have all the Midosh, Torah, and Drashas behem when it comes to a Kal V'chomer. So that's the one that's supposed to be the most logical, the one that we can figure out most on our own. We don't need a Masorah for, you think. But then every once in a while, you're reminded why Kal V'chomers are more complicated than they seem. So here's a good example. So Reb Moshe has a tshuva where he is inclined l'kula about the contemporary situations. And he talks about a situation where you have a couple that's already intermarried, and they're coming to convert. And his inclination, l'kula, and there's a mixture of different circumstances here, as we'll see, but his inclination, l'kula, is to draw a distinction between where it's suspected, okay, fine, and maybe it's even established as fact, like it sounds like from the Tosefta. Okay, let's say we even know it to be true, and let's say there are Edim who know it to be true. Still, it's a problem. Why is it a problem? Says Rav Moshe, because the issue is one of Pirsum. So even though the Edim might know it, but the whole world doesn't know it, and we don't want to make the whole world know about this Avera. That's not appropriate. That's a Chil Hashem. Right? So we don't want to put this Avera into the public sphere. So if it's suspected, we don't want to confirm it. If it's confirmed for a limited population, we don't want to make it known to the whole world. But, says Reb Moshe, if they're married, right, so then the whole world knows. Right, so then already you're not adding anything. So let's you see where the Kal V'chomer gets a little complicated. Right? So then if the whole world knows, and all you're doing is making it halachic now, so then you haven't added any pirsum to the story, and that Reb Moshe says he thinks makes a difference. And that's a significant tzad l'hakel that's going to affect a lot of real-life situations. Now, what's also very interesting and very kedai to read, so definitely tell you to look at it inside, especially to see the whole sweep of one of the great gedolim of the 20th century, how he looked at this question, is to look at the tshuvas of Reb Chaim Ozer. So Reb Chaim Ozer Grzinski and his Tshuvas Achiezer, he has a number of Tshuvas about Geirus, and we'll be coming back to them. But for this point, if you look at the Tshuvas Chelek Gimel and Siman Chavav, so he talks about this issue also, about trying to understand the issue of Niton and how exactly it impacts some of the contemporary, in his time not so long ago, some of the contemporary situations. So in considering the Isser of Nitan here, like I said, the whole back and forth of one of the great Gedolim, how he looked at this issue, so there's essentially three phases to the tshuva. In the first phase, he considers the Isser of Nitan, and Rashi and the other Rishonim, and this question of the other Rishonim saying that it'll cast out on the L'shem Shamayim commitment, and why should we care about that? Same question Reb Moshe would deal with. But so Reb Moshe, when he dealt with it, he said that that's an inclination against those Rishonim, because hard to understand why we should care if the Geirus is going to be good anyway. Reb Chaim Ozer is not ready to dismiss that position, and most of his analysis of the Isser of Nitan ends up coming out L'chumra. So he considers a couple of different angles. And, you know, he considers the question of when you know somebody has a possibility of an ulterior motive, so how exactly does that affect the process? Maybe we should say, okay, here we're dealing with an Issur Derabanan, and if we're not 100% sure, maybe we should say it's a Safek Derabanan and we should be Mekel, or maybe we should say Dvarim Shebelev. And then he goes through that whole issue that we talked about a little bit last week, that on the one hand, Dvarim Shebelev, if you just have a mindset that contradicts your words, so normally we say Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim. But as we mentioned last week, and as Reb Chaim Ozer discusses, there's at least two reasons to maybe say differently here. That if somebody doesn't have real intent to be Mekabel Judaism and its rules, we wouldn't say that that's only Dvarim Shebelev that we don't pay attention to. And the two reasons that he discusses for that are, first of all, maybe it's an anan sadi, maybe everyone can see that they're not serious, and maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about. It's known that there's a relationship there, so everyone can see that it's not serious. Or maybe the whole point of Geirus is a Kabbalah Belev, and therefore we do care about Dvarim Shebelev more than we would in terms of a transaction or the like. So essentially, his analysis of the sugya of Nitan comes out without much room to be mekel. And essentially, from the lumdus of the sugya, that his inclinations are l'chumra in understanding it. But that's phase one of the tshuva. That's stage one of what he discusses there. Stage two, he considers a tzad l'kula, which was the premise of the questioner, the one who raised the question, said, what if we have to worry that with this couple, if we, the careful Beis Din, that is careful to play by the rules, if we don't accept them, then they'll go to another Beis Din that's not going to follow the rules and is going to have an unacceptable geiris. So is that a reason to take a different attitude? So there again, he ends up coming out l'chumra. He's not convinced by that. He says that's not something that we can take on, and he has a lot of technicalities there to explain why not. But essentially, he says that that's an approach of chatei kedei sheyizke. We should do a little avera in order to preserve a bigger schus. And he says not justified in this case, and he explains why. And he's not won over by that svar at all. So phase two is also the hachmir, right? So as far as the lumdus of Nitan, he's inclined to be machmir, and as far as that approach, that all they'll go somewhere else, so you know, he's not so worried about that either. He's not ready to accept that, so say phase two is also the hachmir. But then phase three, he ends up coming out with a different attitude, and that's how the tshuva ends. He says, but what if you're dealing with a couple that they're already intermarried, but now they want to raise a Jewish family, so they want to convert. And let's say it's the wife who needs to convert, and there's also a concern that if we don't allow this, so then the husband is going to himself convert the other way. He'll become a mishumet. He'll be lost to Judaism. So is that a reason to be mekel? So there he ends up being more convinced by that concern. And he bases it, as far as earlier Acharon, he bases it on the tshuva of Rav Shlomo Kluger. In the tshuvas Tuv Tam Vadas, Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote many, many svarim and a number of shilas and tshuvas svarim with different titles. But this is from the tshuvas Tuv Tam Vadas. So his last line is to be mekel, or at least to allow being mekel, based on the psak of Rav Shlomo Kluger, and he mentions there, as we discussed last week, the Beis Yosef and the Shach's conclusion that everything depends on the assessment of the Beis Din, so he's more ready to allow that. And there, the understanding is that here, if the Beis Din sees it, that there's going to be a bigger kilkel from not allowing this to allowing it, that's a tzad to allow it. And in the course of his discussion, so he makes reference to a Ma'arik that Rav Shlomo Kluger is based on, and a tshuva of the Rambam, and the tshuva is Per Hador, where in both of those cases they're talking about different dinim that are either mentioned in the Mishnah or related. So he talks there about shifcha, the Rambam talks about if somebody is suspected of a relationship with a shifcha, so the Mishnah had addressed that also. And the Rambam in his Per Hador, the Rambam says, this is not really an ideal relationship, but if that's the best you can do, so to prevent any further kilkulim, so sometimes we have to try to pursue what's going to be the least harmful approach. And the Ma'arik was talking about a different consideration, somebody who's suspected of a relationship with a Pnuya and then wants to marry her. So should we say that somebody who's suspected of an affair with a Pnuya is not allowed to marry her because it'll confirm the affair? Or should we say that no, better therefore he should marry her, the same way we find that a Ma'anis is mechuyev to marry if the girl wants, Amanis is mechuyev to then take care of her. So maybe the same logic should apply here. So those are all slightly different dinim, and as Reb Chaim Ozer acknowledges, they're different dinim, but maybe there is an aspect that's relevant here. And ultimately, he finds more room to be mekel as far as that's concerned. So following the different phases of this tshuva, a very fascinating reading, it's very sweeping and thorough analysis of all the different angles to consider here. So essentially we have Reb Chaim Ozer's perspective that conceptually the Isser Nitan is pretty machmir, doesn't allow much room for wiggle room. The idea that they'll go to a different Bezdin with different standards is not something he thinks needs to be weighed in too much. And the conclusion, though, to factor in other things, that if Lamaisa, this is what's going to keep this couple more within the fold as far as their practice, that's a different consideration. And that is something that has more weight to it. So Lamaisa, nowadays, you don't hear about this Isser of Nitan so much, and it doesn't seem like it is playing such a role. And it seems to be for a combination of these reasons. Essentially, either because it's understood that, okay, this is not l'charchila, but it's better than the alternative, that it's better than what might happen otherwise, so therefore there is an approach to be makel for that. Or, like Reb Moshe writes, that when you're dealing with a relationship that is completely public, so then there isn't anything that's going to be any worse by confirming it. And therefore, that presumably one could also factor in with the other elements, that since it's also going to have a very negative impact to push this couple away and say that there's no potential conversion at this point, even with Kabbalah Samitzvos, right? If we're going to be so machmir to say that even if the woman is ready to fully take on Judaism in all senses of the word, but we're going to be machmir because of the history, so then you're going to really have a very negative impact on this family. So that, Reb Chaim Ozer was machshiv, but especially together with Reb Moshe Sfara, that you're not really adding any fuel to the fire here, because it's already completely public, so that's a factor in why we find that this doesn't play that much of a role. Hi, Elliot.
Would Reb Moshe Lamaisa be more makel for a couple that was already married than one that was about to get married?
Probably, because of the level of pirsum. It's also a svara, which Reb Chaim Ozer mentions and others mention, is that, ironically, you know, again, you see the Kal Vachomers are sometimes complicated, that as much as we're so against intermarriage and you would never tell a couple get married before the conversion, but there's a svara why it's better, because if they did already get married, so then this conversion is not l'shem ishus, because they're already married. So they were willing to get married without the conversion, so now they're getting conversion. Now the conversion is not for the marriage. The marriage happened without it. Now, by the way, this is an interesting question as far as how you assess the weight of different motivations, right? Because if you have an intermarried couple that wants to convert, you could say, listen, it's still for the marriage, because yes, okay, they went ahead and got married without it, but the parents are unhappy and everything is awkward and there's a lot of tension with the broader family, and they always wanted the son to marry Jewish, and he's still going to be happier in his marriage if she converts. Right? So why don't you say, okay, so it's still for the sake of marriage. But it's a very significant question of degree. Because, yes, if somebody, there's a big difference between somebody who can't get married to this woman unless she converts, and somebody who married her anyway, but would be happier with the marriage if she converts. That's a whole different level of degree as far as conversion for the sake of marriage. And the fact that they were willing to go ahead without it, it says something about how much of a factor it is. Ironically, again, because clearly it's from a religious perspective, it's so much worse to do that, but yet it ends up impacting this question differently. So perhaps counterintuitively, for this Shaila, it has a little bit of a advantage when they are already married. And also the fact if there are children in the mix, that also impacts things. It also impacts the cost and the human issue. So certainly also is a part of the equation. Tyler.
Can we just please explain the Reb Moshe one more time?
Yeah, so Reb Moshe, you know, Reb Chaim Ozer's Svara is a little more fundamental, so Reb Moshe is like on top of it. But, you know, one part of it is that this may just end up being the lesser of two evils. Right? That if you have, if you're going to say that this is off the table, the impact that's going to have to the religious life of the Jewish party and of any family members that exist could be much worse. So that's a part of it. But then what Reb Moshe is addressing even more fundamentally, he's saying that the nature of the Isser Derabanan isn't even relevant if they're already married, already in a public relationship. Because according to Rashi, and Reb Moshe really doesn't accept the other Rishonim who have a different reason, as opposed to Reb Chaim Ozer who explains the other Rishonim. But so Reb Moshe is focused on Rashi. So according to Rashi, the issue is confirming the rumor. So if it's public, there's nothing to confirm. Right? Despite the fact that if it's known and verified, that doesn't help. Like the Tosefta says, doesn't have it a rumor, Tosefta has it just as there is a relationship. That doesn't help because Reb Moshe says the Isser is about Pirsum. But if it's already Mefursum, if it's already as public as it could get, so then you're not adding anything.
So he just totally doesn't go with the Tosefta.
No, he's saying that the Tosefta is talking about where it's known, but it's not, it's verified, but it's not public. So let's say there was a definite relationship, and let's say we had Adim that there was a relationship. So okay, so still, we don't want to let them get married, because that will make the whole world know. And the Isser is about making it public. We don't want to publicize this Aveir. So that's what the Tosefta is dealing with. That he could accept. But the question is, it's more than it's just a fact. But it's a public fact. It was in the New York Times social pages. So then, if it's a public fact, what are you adding? So then, if you're not giving any more support to what the whole world knows already, that's going to be a different story.
If he finds a way to merge Rashi and Tosefta in a good way.
Well, you see, his position is working off of Rashi and saying that even with the Tosefta, Tosefta doesn't contradict Rashi. Right, because you might think that Tosefta does contradict Rashi, because if Rashi says about confirming the rumors, so then maybe we should say it doesn't apply if it's a known fact. So he says, no, it still could apply, because a known fact isn't public. The Isser is about making it public. But if it's totally public, that's a different story. Then that is a reason to be makel. Okay, so one way or another, for a combination of these reasons, you don't find this having such an impact as far as how Geirus is accepted today, as long as there is a Kabbalah Semitzvos, as long as the other spouse is ready to fully accept the demands of the religion. So then we don't find that the Yisr Nitan so much, I want to speak for everyone, but we don't find that it has, in many cases, such an impact for the combination of these reasons. But again, there's a strong emphasis, like the Ritva is saying, that the reason it's acceptable in the end of the day is because there should be a genuine acceptance. But if there is a genuine acceptance, whatever brought it to the table, that would be a different story. Okay, there's more to say about this, and we'll come back to this, because some of this also ties into the question of Kabbalah Samitzvos. So when we get to that Sugi B'Mkomo, we'll end up coming back to some of these issues. I only wanted to discuss it now to the extent that it's relevant to being the Kabbalah person in the first place with Kabbalah Samitzvos. But when there's an issue that impacts the Kabbalah Samitzvos, that will have other ramifications. Just to throw out one example, Reb Moshe has a tshuva about what if the man she's involved with is a Kohen. Right, so then she's planning on marrying a Kohen as a Gioris. That's a problem. So then that brings up other mitzvos considerations. So these are more complex issues. We'll come back to those in the context of Kabbalah Semitzvos. Here we're just talking about it as far as the Isser Nitan is concerned. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so now let's just discuss for a few minutes. Now let's segue into the process, and we'll say much more about it tomorrow, God willing. But just to kind of segue from one to the other, so this whole part, the whole idea of investigating is, like we saw, to make sure that the candidate is somebody who we want to embrace as a potential Ger Tzedek. And it's also a part of the process to make sure that there's going to be a full readiness to go through the process, which means accepting the practice of Judaism and the nationhood of Judaism, which are two crucial partners here. And Rav Soloveitchik understood that the idea of emphasizing the turbulent history of the Jewish people is for that reason, because since Geirus is not only about taking on the practice, but it's also about joining the Jewish nation, so we want to make sure they're ready for both. So when we saw in the Gemara and Yevamos that both of these are approaches that we take when we start investigating, we start questioning the candidate, they say that, you know, that the Jews have had such a hard time, and if they say yes, it's still an honor, and then we say, you know, there's all these mitzvos you're going to have to do that are going to be, you're going to be held liable for. Those are two separate phases of the examination process, so it speaks to these two aspects, that they're converting to Jewish practice, but also converting to Jewish nationhood, and that's also a crucial part of what Geirus means. So how do you convert to Jewish nationhood? So what does that mean, practically speaking? So if you had a chance to see the Gemara Maseches Krisus on Daf Tes, picking up from the Mishnah on Daf Ches, so the Gemara there tells us that, like we said from the beginning of day one, that all of Klal Yisrael converted as a unit, and that teaches what it means to convert as an individual after that process. That any individual who is looking to join the Jewish people has to follow the same process that the Jews at Har Sinai did, or leading up to Har Sinai. And what we find is listed there is three aspects. Kabbalah Samitzvos is not mentioned there yet, and we'll have to talk about that separately. But what is mentioned there is Mila and Tfila and Korban. And Korban, okay, that's a problem for us nowadays. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so says the Gemara. So, all right, maybe that's the end of the story. So maybe we should say that we can't be Mekabel Geirim Bizman Hazeh. And the Gemara says, no, we know that's not true, because the Gemara says L'dar Seichem. The Pasuk says L'dar Seichem, and the Gemara picks up on that, that it was always the case, it must always be possible for Geirim to be accepted. So that's itself, that's from the Torah, and that's itself a statement of our commitment to welcoming Geirim, this assumption that we're not going to let a technicality, you know, a major technicality, get in the way. We're going to say that Geirus always has to be possible. And this is despite the fact that the Gemara that you've seen already has statements that say in certain points in history we weren't Mekabel Geirim because of the suspicion of ulterior motives when the Jews were on top and the like, and Mordechai and Esther and Shlomo, and times like that. But here we see that's also the difference between the L'Cherchila and B'dievet. That's talking about the motivation. So when we're concerned about ulterior motives, that's a reason not to be Mekabel in the first place. But that Geirus is technically possible throughout history, that's what the Torah is emphasizing. That it's always technically possible, and a korban cannot therefore be ma'akev. And there is a discussion, the Athne Nezer has a tshuva in Shin Dalet Mem, in Yoridea, about whether that means it's not ma'akiv even when it is possible. Right? They say that a convert who doesn't bring a korban bisman hamikdash is still a ger, or is it ma'akev then? So that's a lumdish issue, has implications for kachim and the like. That's not so relevant for us yet. Halavai should be relevant soon. We won't have to fast on Tisha B'Av if we can make it relevant in the next 2 weeks. But lemaisa, that's not so much of a practical issue today. But at the end of the day, so the korban is not ma'akev, and it's the other two that are ma'akev. And even as far as the other two being ma'akev, so that's also complicated, because clearly not everyone's in a position to do mila, because women are not in a position to have mila. So for women, it's clearly not ma'akev. And what does that say about the role of mila in the process? If it's possible for some people to convert without mila, so we have to figure out what exactly that means for how mila fits in. Tyler,
can you explain the machlokas Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer
in terms of the role of the korban?
Yeah.
So that's, again, it's a question which I would point you to the Avnei Nezer as far as the lumdist of that, because he gets involved with that question. And to look at, you saw the Rambam in Perusha Mishnayos, where he gets into that. So that's important from a lumdisha perspective. Not to spend so much time on it here, because again, as far as the practicalities of contemporary Geirus, it's not going to affect us so much. It has to do with how it relates to, is there another standard of Geirus for Kachin? Is it possible that one might be a Geir without being able to partake fully in Kachim without the Karbonis aspect fully addressed? So that has lumdish implications as far as we're concerned right now.
When the Chum say that it's a mitzvah,
mm-hmm.
that means you're obligated to do so, no? Meaning
obligated to bring the Korban.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's possible.
Okay.
Right, so when we know that for sure, the question is whether it's it has a greater impact on the role of a ger in Bizman HaMikdash. But halavai, you know, we're in the weeks right now, we're especially focused on hoping that we'll have Beis HaMikdash soon. But as of today, so far, it's not relevant, at least at 12:30 today. Hopefully, you know, hold that hope. So what we want to start picking up with tomorrow, and we'll just recap and then we'll pick up tomorrow, is some fundamental questions. We'll start with Mila, because that's what's first, but that's a part of what we want to understand. So what exactly is the role of Mila here? Why does Mila play such a important primary role out of all the mitzvos? Why does that play such an important role in the Geirus process? What does that represent? And what's the relationship of Mila and Tefila to each other? And why is it that Mila comes first? And there's an important ritva about this. I don't know if you had a chance on today's Makaris, I don't know if you had a chance to get to it, but we'll definitely look to focus on that tomorrow. And it has a interesting connection to this week's Parsha, so a little bit of synergy. You can study the Parsha at the same time. So we'll start with that question. What exactly does Mila represent as the crucial part of this process? And why is the order the way it is? Why is it that Mila is before Tefila? And how crucial is that? Could they be switched around? We'll see that's Machlokas Rishonim. What exactly does that Machlokas represent? So we'll pick up with that tomorrow. So just to quickly recap, we spoke about today. So we got a little bit more into the question of marriage and motivation for Geirus. And in addition to the other issues, we mentioned the Yisur D'Rabbanan of Nitan, and we tried to figure out how does that impact some of the contemporary marriage Geirus situations. And we saw that as a matter of practice, it doesn't seem to have that much impact. And looking to understand why, we focused primarily on the tshuva of Reb Chaim Ozer, where he has three phases, first to Lahachmir, but ultimately openness Lakula, if it's the best approach for the religious integrity of this family. And Reb Moshe's tshuva, where he also inclines Lakula, based on an additional component that Rashi's indication that the Isser is to confirm the rumor, and if it's already public, then you're not adding anything. And we went through the various elements to that issue. And then we talked also about this question of nationhood and Jewish practice, and how the investigation is supposed to clarify both issues. And then that got us into this question of what the process is of entering into Jewish nation and Jewish practice. And the Gemara links them, that just as the Jewish nation became the Jewish nation in Har Sinai, so too anyone who wants to enter into the Jewish nation has to follow the same process. We saw that that's Mila, Tefillah, and Karva, and Karva Muzman is as impossible, so therefore it's not Ma'akev, because anything that would have made it impossible can't be because of Ladar Seichem. It must be possible in all generations. A suffix in the Achronim, like the Avinezer and others, about whether that would still be true when it is possible. That's Hilchos L'Mashiach. And we set that up to start tomorrow with a question of understanding the role of Mila, the relationship of Mila to Tefillah, and the importance of doing them in the right order. So we will, God willing, pick up with that tomorrow. Wish everyone a safe and healthy and productive day. And I will see you, God willing, then.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right. Yashikarach. Galtuv. Thank you.